problem too. I got a 4-page letter of opposition.
Good morning. It's now 8:07. This is the House Utilities Restructuring Committee. We do have a quorum. Representative Porter, Mr. Vice Chair is here, John Cowdery, Representative Davies, Representative Roekberg, who will be presenting the first bill, and Representative Cott. So we do have a quorum. I think the only person missing right at the moment is Representative Berkowitz, and he'll be joining us soon. We're going to, first of all, for those that are listening in on the line, and we do have folks that are want to be listening in on the line for the two bills that we have before us, is House Bill 81 and House Bill 185. The presentations that we had listed are not going to take place today. MEA Tuckerman Babcock was going to give us a presentation on the MEAs, and for whatever reasons they have canceled out. And we were going to have Eric Yule from Eureka give us a power cost equalization update. That will be coming along later, right at the moment. That's not a schedule for this morning. So we have two items. House Bill 81, we'll take that first. And in your packet, the second bill is quite a ways back into, I think it's the last two or three pages of your docket before you. And now we have a completely full House. Representative Berkowitz is here as well. So with that, Representative Roekberg, if you would tell us about your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Norman Roekberg from District 11 in Anchorage, for the record. And joining me at the podium is my staff assistant, Ms. Janet Seitz, is here for any technical questions that I can't remember.
And it's hard to believe.
Her work on this. I want to thank her very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for taking up this legislation. House Bill 81 is the result of the testimony and the information that was provided to the legislature in the form of the Joint Committee on Electrical Restructuring, which is an interim committee which I co-chaired with Senator Sharp this last year. In our studies of the electrical restructuring issue, it became apparent to me, Mr. Chairman, that because we are fundamentally a publicly power-owned state, that the first building block that we should take up in consideration of any electrical restructuring is the consumer protection issues and giving guidance to the APUC as to what the legislature believes to be the most important issues before we, if you will, dive off the cliff into any area of semi-deregulation or restructuring. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we have drafted this legislation, which is intended to be triggered if, in fact, the APUC and or the legislature adopts any form of electrical restructuring or retail wheeling, whatever you wish to describe it. Mr. Chairman, I have passed out to the committee a letter that was addressed to myself and Representative Sanders as the chairman of a subcommittee in the Labor and Commerce Committee last year, or in 1997, which is an opinion of the Department of Law, indicating that under existing statute, the APUC has the ability, without legislative direction, to take up and grant competition. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd point out that over the course of testimony to the interim committee, this was a major subject of topic of conversation. But I would report to you that I think there's general consensus throughout the states and the utilities that the APUC does retain this power. At one point, a couple years ago, there was some controversy about whether or not it existed. But I think everybody recognizes now or agrees with this legal opinion that the APUC does have the power. And with that, Mr. Chairman, because there is a docket before the APUC by Aurora Power to be an aggregator or reseller of power, I think this bill is appropriate currently, and therefore it has some sense of urgency in the sense that even if the legislature does not act on the report from CH2M Hill, that the docket before the APUC allows them and almost asks them to take up the whole issue of restructuring and particularly that of the reseller or the aggregator. So, Mr. Chairman, it's my opinion that the provisions for these regulations and consumer protection should be in place before that docket is ruled on finally to in the public interest. I mean, and this proposal is not unique among the states, Mr. Chairman. You'll find in your packet just some examples of legislation and reports from various other jurisdictions, including Arizona, California, Maine, Delaware, that have adopted electric bill, consumer bills of rights. So I can't take credit for being the originator of this idea, but it's a positive legislative plagiarism, if you will, that we address these particular issues. And among the issues that are covered here, Mr. Chairman, are the right to know, the right to choose, and the right to fair dealing, the right to redress, the right to privacy, the right to service quality, and the required code of conduct and oversight. And the bill further mandates that regulations to require that electric service providers must continue to provide service to residential consumers who demonstrate that economic hardship has prevented the payment of the bill in full. So this speaks to the issue of the provider of last resort, but also speaks to the issue of inability to pay and those particular consumer issues. The bill is intentionally simple in a sense to give maximum flexibility to the APUC in drafting the regulations, but on the other hand, it points out and stipulates those areas that should be covered by the commission. We also have distributed to you a email that we received just yesterday from Carl Robata of CH2M Hill, who was kind enough to look at the legislation and makes a critique of the legislation. He has several points and recommendations to the committee regarding adjustments to the bill. We hadn't had time to digest that or put it in any amendment form, Mr. Chairman, but I would commend that to the committee. We do have a letter of opposition from Carper Valley Electrical Association, and it points out something very interesting that everybody should be aware of, that in the existing statutory scheme in Alaska, publicly owned utilities may opt out by election, and Copper Valley has opted out of regulation by the APUC from economic regulation. However, this bill before you does provide that it can't be opted out from, and that's an important fact, and I wanted to bring that to the committee's attention, because consumer bills of rights and protection of the consumer interest is important whether you're regulated or not. And so I think it should have a universal application to all consumers in the state of Alaska. But there's concerns, and I appreciate Mr. Wilkinson's concern. Hopefully he'll be on teleconference this morning to be able to testify. We also have testimony, hopefully, from Ms. Pease from Aurora Power, speaking to some of the issues that are important here. Mr. Chairman, I think there is a certain sense of urgency in this legislation. I think it needs to be tuned up a little bit, but I commend this to the committee and look forward to working on this and reporting this bill out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Rokeberg. Representative Berkowitz and then Mr. Vice Chair.
Thanks very much. Just a couple of questions, if I could, Mr. Chair. I know there's some legislation from other states. Which was the pattern for your legislation?
Mr. Chairman, my staff is good enough not to have stuck to one particular state, but I defer to Ms. Seitz if she can help.
Mr. Chairman, this is Janet Seitz of Representative Rokeberg's office. It's basically patterned after Michigan.
After Michigan?
Okay.
Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. Two quick follow-ups. First of all, it seems to me that if we eliminated the adjective competitive throughout the legislation, and the consumer protection would apply to all consumers in the state. Plus, it would avoid the problem of having providers claim that they weren't in a competitive market and therefore they didn't have to comply.
Alderman? Well, Mr. Chairman, the intention of the bill is to have these protections in place only for those areas and those jurisdictions that have competition. I mean, although my statement was such that there's certain universality to this, I believe under current regulatory authority, a lot of these issues should be spoken to. The concern here is what type of statutory and regulatory regime would any competitive, including a pilot program, be operating under? And this, the intent of the legislation is to draw to the Commission's attention what the legislature believes the public policy of the state should be in a competitive environment, not a fully regulated environment necessarily.
Follow up? Quick response to my next question. That would leave consumers in a non-competitive environment with different rights than consumers in a competitive environment.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's probably an accurate statement. The question then becomes, are those consumers in a non-competitive environment properly protected by our existing regulatory scheme? It's not the intention of the bill to rewrite the entire regulatory scheme that we have here. It's to rewrite it in that area if we adopt a competitive marketplace conditions for electric service providers. Although I would agree with I think the point of Representative Berkowitz is that do these unregulated, regulated consumers deserve any less rights? I think what the bill speaks to, though, are instances, for example, the single billing provisions and things like that, which really only apply to competition in those types of circumstances.
Final point. Mm-hmm. That being the intent, it would seem to me we could do something to tighten the title up. This is a consumer protection bill. It's otherwise.
Mr. Chairman, I love them tight titles.
We do too, particularly when they hit the floor. Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah. We got. I got about 15 pages of stuff here. I'm trying to read the bill and everything. I don't think this was. I hope was this available in my office before this morning, or just laid on my desk this
morning?
They
were just faxed in.
Pardon?
This material was just faxed in or delivered.
Yeah. Anyway, my question. You said that the small utilities. This doesn't affect the small ones, the unregulated utilities, just regulated or unregulated. Does it affect both, or the small utilities is your intention not to affect?
No, Mr. Chairman, through the Chair, Representative Cowdery, it's not a matter of size, it's a matter of whether you'd be in a competitive environment or not. Yeah. Currently, all utilities in the state that are not opted out are regulated by the APUC. Even the opt-out utilities still are regulated in terms of their service area, so their certification is still there. So there's that provision, they can't opt out of that. That's their exclusive service area. So the distinction is the whole issue of restructuring or competitive marketplace. If we don't currently have that, the point of this bill is that it's subject to, or it's contingent on, the creation of any kind of competitive environment. And I think Mr. Rubaga's, one of his recommendations is to make sure that the bill's clear that it would affect the pilot program.
Follow up, Mr. Vice Chair.
In our town, MLMP and CEA and maybe MEA, do they have an opinion, or have they have anything to say on this bill?
I don't know if we received any formal testimony per se on the bill. I've, you know, been in discussions with them for several years, but specifically I have not received any formal reaction. That's, I believe they're probably waiting for the bill to be heard, and I suspect that we will be hearing from them, and hopefully we'll do so.
We do have, Mr. Vice Chair, we do have Robert Wilkerson from CVEA that will be testifying on the bill this morning, as well as Steve Kahn from ACPIRG. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Norm, you mentioned in your introduction that it provided some protection of privacy. Do you know where in the bill does it?
I believe it's on page 2, subsection 4, starting on line 15, subsection 4. Maintain records, information records, including records concerning the use patterns about the electric service providers to consumers as confidential records. That's the provision there. There is additionally some comments by Mr. Rubago on that also as to the treatment of those records. And the intent there is that the competitive forces or a competitor doesn't become privy to that. Although there is provisions and recommendations that the records be available but without the names attached to them, so they can be part of a statistical pool so we understand what's going on.
Representative, I'm looking for any reference to reliability requirement for that as a standard within this Bill of Rights.
Chairman, it's here. Let's see if we can locate it. It's on page 2, line 31. Officials will adopt regulations that require supplier or aggregated operating competitive electrical service market to meet minimum standards of certification as a condition of a market entry.
And reliability would fit within those minimum standards? Is that?
That would be the intention. I think, Mr. Chairman, that reliability, when we were taking testimony on restructuring at the interim committee, was probably the number one issue. We had significant testimony from north of the border, but up in the Gilgan Valley area and those areas about the real importance of that. I just must have been the arsenic in the water this morning. There's some in Juneau, too, I know.
That's our next bill.
Quite a bit of it.
No more.
Just naturally. We have to mine around here to take the arsenic out of the water.
Want to clean it up? This
yeah, term? Clean it up, yeah. Any other questions? Representative Davis?
There may be some question about defining when we've entered a competitive electric service market that we might want to consider. For example, is wholesale competition a competitive retail market? And, you know, there's in the report that we got from CH2M Hill, so far as I've been able to digest it, there are a variety of pathways that they talk about. You know, there's jumping in with both feet, and there's systematically getting there. And the question, I guess, in my mind is, it seems likely to me that we might want to do that sort of more, in some form, a more measured approach to getting into retail competition. And if we do that, when does this get triggered? When are we really in a competitive electric market? And I guess we might want to, I mean, that could be something left to the APUC to decide, but that whenever there's some consumer choice, this thing would have to come into effect. But then,
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Rockford.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davies, if you direct your attention to the email from Mr. Rubago, that speaks exactly to that point, the very bottom of it, and his paragraph two at the bottom of the page. This is the subject re-consumer bill. He provides us with a sample definition, because he recommends the same thing you do. We need to be specific about that. And it says a competitive electrical service market means a market or program in which retail electricity customers are provided a choice of electricity provider, whether on a permanent, limited, or pilot basis. Clear, and I'd be recommending that as an amendment to the bill to make sure that is clarified.
Representative Davies?
Mr. Chairman, I just wondered what your intent was. I feel a little bit like the Vice Chair was indicating earlier that I've been deluged with a certain amount of paper, including this very important email. I think, are we going to move this today, or are we just going to hear testimony and concerns and then kind of digest that?
I think we'll work through the testimony and we'll determine from as a committee how we feel about it. I would like that definition that is at the bottom of Robago's paper here to be incorporated in. We should definitely have an amendment, I think, to incorporate that.
I agree, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the
statement. Before we move it out of the committee, I think.
I'd requested Ms. Robago's input when he was last here, and we just received this yesterday, and I really appreciate his taking his time to look it over, and I think he's not only complimentary to the legislation, but he makes some extremely, I think, important recommendations that we probably should follow.
One of the questions that I have, Representative Roquefort, is we're putting in a new provision in there to essentially tell the commission to establish by regulation all of these consumer protective elements in here. To your knowledge, particularly since you've dealt with this throughout the interim last year, how many of these are they currently dealing with? What are they? Do they have anything like this already on the books that we're trying to expand or to fulfill, or do they not?
Mr. Chairman, they do have provisions on the economic hardship issue, but in terms of many of the other issues, I'm basically guessing that they don't, because a lot of these are based on the necessity to have regulation in a competitive environment, not a non-competitive environment, like the single billing, the offerings, the educational requirements, things of that nature. We do have clearly provisions on reliability and service and certification, I think. But, those are areas they would have, but in large part, I don't think they would have on a number of these points. Mr. Chairman, I would point out, too, that I just consulted with Mr. Wilcox in regard to receipt of a fiscal note, and there may be a substantial fiscal note attached to this, so we don't know yet. We've had some conversations with the commission. In a certain sense, it doesn't surprise me. In another sense, it's a little bit disappointing. But anytime you're drafting regulations, particularly of the scope of this, this fundamentally is a essential portion of any restructuring regime, and therefore it's going to incur some costs. So that just goes with the territory. So that's up to the legislature to decide whether we want to absorb any of those costs and how we do that in relationship to this. So we do await the receipt of that fiscal note to see what their opinions are or any testimony to that effect.
We have no fiscal note on this at all.
No, we haven't received it yet, according to the committee.
Okay. With that, then, I think we'll move out on the teleconference. And I'd like to go to Anchorage first. Steve Kahn on House Bill 81, please.
Can you hear us now?
Yes, Anchorage, we can hear you. It's Steve Kahn on the line there, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Steve Kahn for Alaska Public Interest Research Group. First of all, I want to really thank Representative Roper. From day one, as we enter the brave new world of electric restructure and deregulation, he has consistently and persistently sought and sought to learn about and sought to define the consumer's interests. And this is a very positive development in this area. And I certainly thank him for that. The bill as such is seeking, of course, to address the brave new world in which consumers will now be confronting competition, and at the same time, some of the problems that have arisen in California. I know that in California, there were people who held themselves out as capable of providing service and actively soliciting consumers, and they in fact could not. And so the pre-certification requirements are absolutely, that have been mentioned, are absolutely essential. The problem that maybe is less apparently dealt with here in the bill is the slamming phenomenon that we've already seen in telecommunications, whereby someone calls and before you know it, you've been switched. The FCC has developed regulations in the telecommunications area on allowing a consumer who discovers that he's now working with brand X provider and really didn't realize that he or she was, to opt out of that within a certain period of time. And I would suggest to staff that they take a look at that material and maybe grant it yet. Obviously, the APUC, the APUC, an expanded range of jurisdiction over consumer situations that is absolutely essential in this particular new environment that we're moving into does require funding. And of course, I have to say that historically, our biggest problem here in Alaska has not been the absence of legislation on the books to protect consumers, but the wherewithal to enforce and implement that legislation. So I do hope that a fiscal note emerges and that it is satisfactory to the legislature and accompanies this bill throughout. On another issue, of course, that is the bill is seeking to address is the issue of cherry picking. Since quite obviously there are customers who are desirable and there are customers that are less desirable. I have some concern with the language on page 2 around lines 10 through 14, those two provisions. The issue the first being a mandate to provide service so long as it is technically feasible at a reasonable cost to the provider. That provides a lot of wiggle room for abandoning less economically remunerative ratepayers. And I'm a little concerned about that and would hope that the committee and staff would take a look at that. I mean, who is ultimately going to determine the technical feasibility and the quote-unquote reasonable cost? The second thing that I'm a little concerned about is the next paragraph, providing electric services and price options without discrimination. I'm not sure if this language means the same thing as if one person in certain words, the same, provides the same electric service choices and pricing options to all. To me, that if that was the intent, that's a bit clearer than without discrimination, to my way of thinking. But I do appreciate once again the opportunity to testify. I can see great thought has gone into this bill. The consumers are being dragged into electric restructuring. I'm speaking of the residential ratepayers. There has been no human cry on their part for this world. But it is the world that is apparently coming, and it does demand that the APUC or some regulatory mechanism have explicit and broad power to deal with consumer complaints. As we have seen, they do occur, unanticipated things occur, as they have in telecommunications, and the board has the wherewithal and the funding to make that happen. And so this is a very good first step, a logical first step, and I hope that you will take some of my comments under advisement and work a little more to fine-tune the bill. And I thank you very much for this opportunity, sir.
Thank you, Steve. There are questions, Representative Berkowitz.
Thanks so much. Steve, I asked Representative Roepberg this question. I'll ask you it as well. It seems to me that the consumers are best served if we take out the adjective competitive throughout this bill. And if it's going to work for consumers in competitive environments, it ought to work for all consumers.
Well, it's quite obvious that this bill would not have emerged were it not for the competitive reality that is moving across the state. Obviously, it's moving at different levels. We have a lot of electric cooperatives, particularly the smaller ones, that do a very good job of serving their consumers, and there's more of an immediate relationship between those, between the operators and the consumers. It is ultimately going to raise an issue as to whether or not, my own sense of what the word competitive means, Representative, is that it reflects a movement throughout the state and is not reflective of sub-regions. So, I'm viewing this bill as a bill that reflects the entirety of the state, particularly as it relates to suppliers, aggregators, and many other sort of free-floating elements within the larger state environment. So, that's sort of my day comment in response to your question there.
And on that point, if you look at Carl Ravago's comments where he calls for or suggests that we have a definition of a competitive electric service market, the meaning of it, I think that would probably fit in there. And if you leave competitive in there with the definition, then I think it would probably fit better.
On that point, anytime you have a definition, it's a loophole for somebody.
It's an employment for lawyers.
Well, or for utility commissioners.
Or for utility commissioners, yeah. Anyway, that's something that we draw attention to. Thank you, Steve. Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, I thought, competition is supposed to be the best means of consumer protection, and that was what I've been raised to believe anyway. And we deregulate the utilities to allow for competition. And then, just more of a comment. If you had any comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Kahn, did you hear the question? I presume that's to you.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. There is no question that competition is good for the consumer. The problem that we find in all of these new realms that we are dealing with here, whether it's telecommunications or electric or others, is that those who speak with one tongue, competition, often seek to discriminate as they actually move into a realm and implement their endeavors. And so, as for example, Representative, in this particular area, cherry picking is a phenomenon. This bill, that is to say, the new competitor really doesn't want to compete for all the business. They just want to compete for the very best business and pick those cherries. And so a bill like this serves a very useful purpose because it sustains and maintains and underscores competition, the kind of competition that you're talking about.
So, Mr. Vice Chair?
Yeah, if this regulation is needed, when competition occurs, it seems that it must really be needed even more without competition, where there's areas without competition. But anyway, that's just more or less of a statement.
Comment? All right, thank you. Next, then I'll move to Glen Allen, Mr. Wilkerson.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the committee for allowing me to testify. I did send down some comments to the committee yesterday, and so I'll just be very brief and summarize those. I too appreciate Mr. Roseberg and the spirit of the legislation regarding House Bill 81. Agree in principle that a Bill of Rights is certainly appropriate either in a regulated or an unregulated world. I do have two concerns about the legislation, however, the first of which is the fact that the CH2M Hill study is currently open and in draft form. It's my opinion that the study falls far short of properly addressing rural issues. And also, another policy consideration that has not been addressed or finalized is how will public power in general be treated? As you heard from the consultant, this is a public power state with somewhere around 90% of the customers being served by public power utilities. So as such, with those issues open, I believe that adopting a Bill of Rights that would affect every regulated electric utility in the state of Alaska would be premature, given that we are not at all certain competition will be coming to certain parts of Alaska. My second concern is with respect to local regulation, and I appreciate Representative Roseberg pointing out the applicability of Article 3 of Alaska Statute 4205 to all electric utilities in the state. 4205 has a provision where cooperative utilities may opt out from under economic regulation by the commission. Copper Valley exercised that right last year in conducting a local regulation election. And it made sense to 36% of our members who voted on the question, should we be exempt from the APUC? Of those that voted, 67% said, yes, we think we could do it better locally through our board of directors. A major concern during the time when we were waging our local regulation campaign, frankly, was fair treatment and non-discriminatory treatment of the customers by the utility. And as part of our campaign, and we have since formally adopted by board resolution, the tariff that was previously approved by the APUC that we've been operating under for many years. Quite frankly, I don't think you can operate a utility of our size in complexity without such a document. It's a very good program to follow, and so we have adopted that. We intend to make some very modest changes to the tariff to make it a little more user-friendly to the customer. But basically, these are the policies, the rules, the regulations, and the procedures under which we deliver electric service to our members. Part of that local regulation campaign, there was a concern identified by the members that if we took the APUC out, they would not have an appellate body to go to in the event they had a dispute with the members, or with the utility, I'm sorry. We adopted a very expanded complaint procedure and created what we call a board of adjustment. This board is composed of non-employees, non-board members, just members of the association, and it serves as the appellate body for going through a dispute resolution. Specifically, the members can, if they're not satisfied with what the utility, how the utility comes down on a specific issue, they may appeal to the board of adjustment. And then the board of adjustment's appeal may appeal to the full board of directors if the customer is still unsatisfied. We also adopted principles that say that our rates, our services, our policies will be fair and non-discriminatory, and that they will be based upon established industry guidelines for provision of these services. This, again, was a very important issue to the membership. I guess at this point,
By way of wrapping up, I would say that I believe that House Bill 81, as it is currently written and its applicability to locally regulated and other public power municipality utilities, would be subject to this as well. I believe that it's premature to move this on, given where the PH2MDL study is on rural Alaska and public power. I believe that our locally elected board of directors can do the job of providing electrical service much better than the commission. That's a major reason why we opted out from APUC regulation. Frankly, doing business in a rapidly changing environment, when you've got to work through the bureaucracy of the APUC, is very difficult. Copper Valley has two open dockets at the Alaska Commission still dealing with competitive issues. One involving a cogenerator is now in its fifth year, and we have no idea when it's ultimately going to be resolved. A second involving a cherry picking situation. A complaint was filed in October of 1997, and it too is at this point unresolved. So Copper Valley Electric was of the opinion that we just cannot afford, if we're going to be, we're going to survive the new competitive environment, we cannot afford APUC regulation. We think we can do it better on our own. And we're having some success with that. With that, again, I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to testify, and I'm certainly able to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Wilkerson, thank you very much. I would draw your attention to the bill that we took up last week and passed out of this committee, where we call for the APUC to report annually to the legislature not only on the activities but also the open documents or dockets and timeliness of their decision making. I think that will help all of the utilities in the state once we get that passed and into practice there. Are there any questions of Mr. Wilkerson? Representative Porter.
Thank you. Mr. Wilkerson, what kind of competitive arena are you in now that there would be a cherry picking case down there?
Representative Porter, we had a company called Alaska Power Systems that was attempting to install generators adjacent to two of our customers and one customer that we don't currently serve. And basically, it was a direct competitive threat. We could have, if these customers went off the system, then I guess we have a pretty good example of the stranded investment issue. We would lose energy sales from the loss of these customers, and given the fixed nature of the cost to operate this utility, we would have seen adverse rate impacts on our customers. The three situations that I mentioned have more or less gone away. The company is now out of business. The utility still serves two of those customers, and through our efforts to be more competitive, we're hoping to gain the other customer who was going to go with this company. They have previously generated their own electricity for the last 20 or 25 years. So we also had a situation where the same company contracted with our single largest industrial customer. That would be the PetroStar Valdez refinery. And it looked to us like they were going to install their generating equipment. PetroStar would leave Copper Valley, and the members in that situation would be facing a rate increase of over 13%. So cherry picking in rural Alaska is very real, and Copper Valley has seen that firsthand. I would point out that with respect to the cherry picking issue, that would still remain under the purview of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, whether you are locally regulated or economically regulated or not. The reason for that is that issue is specifically is a service territory issue, which the APUC continues to regulate in any event. So if we have another future co-generator come in attempting to take some of our large customers, we would anticipate our avenue would be to file a complaint with the Alaska Public Utilities Commission alleging that that's a violation of the our territorial right.
Great. Thank you. I'd forgotten about those guys.
Representative Roper.
Not the business. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Wilkinson, I appreciate your comments on the bill, and I perhaps you can help clarify for the committee a couple of things. Number one, do you think your concerns with this legislation is more a concern about the ability or inability of the APUC to follow through and implement it? And your concerns with APUC, or is would that be a fair statement? Or are you concerned about the area of competition alone, or what? How would you characterize that?
Representative Roper, I'm concerned that if competition is going to come to rural Alaska, I'm concerned what it's going to look like prior to adopting legislation that would give the APUC broad powers. One of my concerns certainly is whether the APUC can handle this, but more fundamentally, I believe the study does not properly address what competition will look like yet in rural Alaska.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could
follow up, Representative Roper.
Mr. Wilkinson, I don't know if you heard Representative Berkowitz has asked a couple of questions along the line that seems to inquire why the provisions of the bill would not be applicable in a non-competitive environment and therefore would be applicable to your circumstances currently. Could you shed any light on why you don't think or do think that these would be applicable to your circumstances currently?
Representative Roper, it looks to me like House Bill 81 is very much applicable to every utility that requires a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And what I thought I heard the member of the committee indicate is it may be appropriate to include a definition as to where competitive markets are going to exist. And certainly if this bill was modified to say that competitive markets are include the interconnected rail belt system or the Anchorage area, whatever the committee chose to do, then it would certainly make a lot more sense to me.
Well, I guess, let me rephrase my question, I guess. Hopefully that'll help your answer. The notion is if this bill were applied to your service area currently, notwithstanding whether you had competition or not, would you think that would be beneficial or harmful?
I don't. Our board of directors, which are elected by our 3,300 customers, are the best equipped to determine what's best for this region
and
the state, not the Alaska Public Utilities Commission.
Mr. Wilkinson, I have a question. This is the chairman. Would you have something that you could share with the committee that provides us some indication of what you have adopted at your utilities that essentially would substitute for what we're calling for in this this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to provide you with that information.
Okay, and hopefully it's not a vast document, but something that hopefully is somewhat like a Bill of Rights or an abbreviated statement of your requirements.
Mr. Chairman, actually, that would represent a collection of documents. We have bylaws, we have policies, we have strategic plans, we have our tariff, we have a great number of things that address the rights of the customer.
I think I'll pass then. Thank you, though. We may at some point in time like to come back, but I guess what we're looking for is, we're looking for what the constructive elements within the bill are and where they should apply and where they should not apply, and anything succinct that you could give us in that regard to help guide the committee, as well as the prime sponsor of the bill, Representative Roquebert, I think would be really beneficial. You know, this is our first blush at this, and we're trying to figure out how it applies and where it does and what good it does and where it shouldn't be applicable and how to make that happen within the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to provide additional specific comment on the individual sections of the legislation.
Good.
I'm concerned with.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, then, I'd like to go to Petersburg, Mr. Dennis Lewis. And Dennis, we are, I think, I don't know if you heard it earlier or not, but the power cost equalization hearing will not be held today. It's removed from the agenda. But we'd be interested in your testimony on House Bill 81.
Thank you, Chairman, House Representatives. I'm Dennis Lewis, Power and Light Superintendent for the City of Petersburg, Chairman of the Four Dam Pool. You had the opportunity to meet Mr. Carlson, who is here from Petersburg also. This House Bill 81, from the way I read it, I feel that it is premature, and what we need to see is what competition brings before we create some solutions. And right now, at this time, I believe ATUC does have the authority to set up a pilot program, and I think we're just a little premature. Second, the munis. Right now, at least Petersburg, opted out in the middle 70s by election of our voters from APUC. APUC actually only governs two things in our electrical utility here. One is a certificate of convenience, which is actually a service area. And the other is if there's a dispute on joint coal agreements. As far as our rates and competitiveness goes here in the community, we're an isolated community. Our mayor and council do all of our regulations, and I really can't see a small community such as Petersburg being thrown into the wolves and being governed by ATC. That's basically all the comments I have at this time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Any questions? All right. The next and the last one that I have on teleconference is Dave Carlson, I believe, also there. Is that correct?
Thank you, Chairman Hudson. My name is Dave Carlson. I'm a member of the local utility board here. I'm also a former mayor and former council member. And I would just like to reiterate that municipalities such as Petersburg presently have the governing powers in place to deal with these issues, and I can tell you as a member of the utility board and having sat on the council and as mayor for a number of years that the issues that are, a lot of the issues that are addressed in HB 81, they come right before us on the local level, and we have to deal with them there. I'm concerned if APUC becomes more involved in the regulation of our utility, APUC is an anchorage. They are presently very overloaded. And it seems to me that it would just raise the level of regulation to a degree of almost redundancy. These issues we deal with here effectively. The consumer complaints are handled effectively. We're able to deliver energy to our consumers at a very competitive rate effectively. And you know, if I truly thought that APUC could do a better job than what we do locally, then I guess I would be also forced to believe that the federal government could do a better job regulating fish and game than our state fish and game. So that's all my comments. And again, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Roquebert.
I have a question for Mr. Carlson. Mr. Carlson, this bill does not apply to any area that's not under a competitive market situation. would you believe that Petersburg would or should be in a competitive retail marketplace?
I'm sorry, Representative Roeperk, I didn't quite understand that question. Could you repeat it, please?
Well, I'm not sure you understand the bill, because it only applies to those areas that are in a competitive market circumstance. And therefore, do you believe that Petersburg should be a competitive area where there is competitive retail electrical service providers?
Well, as I understand the question, I can say that Petersburg, there is presently not any competition in Petersburg, although we do have the same concerns, could have the same concerns as what Mr. Wilkinson expressed with cherry picking. I guess that is always out there. If the bill specifically is limited to the rail belt area, if that's another issue. And if we are exempt from that, I guess my comments are only worth a couple cents, but I'm not quite sure I understand the entire bill. I just wanted to express my concerns from Petersburg that if competition is extended or regulation is extended to all providers of energy in the entire state, that we want to make sure that our concerns are known to you and expressed to you.
Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair?
Yeah, just to the sponsor, and we have competition in the telephone industry, certainly, and I was wondering if his thoughts, should this bill apply to that industry as well? I mean, it's the same principle.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have competition in there, except in the Anchorage area for our local competition as yet, number one. Number two, I think there's certain areas that would be applicable, but I haven't looked at that.
Not only telephone, but also cable.
Sure.
These are all consumer protection issues, Mr. Chairman, that are supposed to be covered by the regulatory authority, which is the APUC. Mm-hmm. It's the level of which they approach them and in what context. And that's what this bill speaks to, is the context of retail electrical service.
Representative Roper, we do have Bob Lohr from the APUC on the line. Would anybody like to hear his critique of this, or perhaps he could communicate with you directly?
You might want to just bring up the fiscal note before we take up the other legislation, Mr. Chairman, and see
yes.
what.
Mr. Lohr, are you on the line? Can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am here in Anchorage.
All right. Bob, I think one of the things that we could use before we move on with this bill is a fiscal note. And have you had time to review the bill yourself?
Yes, I have reviewed the bill, and staff has prepared a fiscal note for House Bill 81. We've given it to the commission to review yesterday morning. And the commission was in hearing with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System rate case and tied up all day in that hearing, so they did not have a chance to review fairly detailed fiscal note that was prepared, but they did authorize me to forward it through Commerce to the governor's office, and I hope shortly to the committee. Just to take the edge off any suspense, the staff estimate cost of implementing House Bill 81 is $207,700 for FY 2000, and the same level through the year 2003, and then dropping off to zero thereafter. That represents a substantial reduction of the initial staff estimate of what would be involved. But the sponsor indicated, this is not a cheap or a free exercise in terms of steps. Number one, the development of very, very detailed regulations and the crafting of those to be appropriate to the Alaska-specific situation. And secondly, the ongoing response to complaints under the regulations adopted. As we have experienced on the local telephone side, the volume of complaints is substantially increased as a result of local competition. Customers have a choice, but in terms of exercising that choice, customers need to have the kind of rights that are provided in this bill clearly specified, and to be aware of what they are, as well as quite a bit of consumer education about what is involved in making the choice of a service provider, where in the past it's been a monopoly service, and the Commission has very carefully regulated the entry into that monopoly market. Be happy to answer any follow-up questions or other areas you might wish to explore.
You have a question? No? All right. Well, thank you very much. Any kind of written comments, things like that, would be appreciated, and we'll look forward to the fiscal note. And that's all that I have indicated on the network. Anybody else out there that has failed to sign on that wish to testify on 81 before we move on? All right. Any other questions of the committee here? I think the chair is going to hold this bill over, and I know the gentleman from Fairbanks over here would like to have to hear from GVEA, the Golden Valley people, so we'll give him a chance to do that. Maybe the rest of us will have time to look it over a little bit better as well. And Norm, maybe you could, you know, taking from some of the comments that you've heard here, you might find some areas of we want to tighten up this whole definition of where it would apply. I think that's a major thing.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, if
yes. Representative Brokberg,
I'd go ahead and prepare a CS based on the input from Mr. Rodrigo and present that back to the committee for their review.
All right. Then we'll,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative, who
Davis.
Did Davis?
Yeah.
Representative Porter. Got eyes on both sides here.
I guess from the testimony we received, especially from Copper Valley, I'm perplexed about, would this, if this statute were in place, would it kick in a small community the minute somebody decided to come in and sell a generator? If that is the case, it would be problematical, I think. So.
And also, Representative Porter, at the moment, at any rate, they have the option of opting out. So the question is then, if they opt out, then it wouldn't apply or does apply? Representative Davis, then Roper.
I agree with the, that was one of my questions about how you define when this thing goes in. I think it's important that we do that. The way I would hope it got interpreted would be that that issue would be dealt with under the territorial regulatory powers of APUC and not under this, but I could see where the ambiguity would be there, and I think we need to remove that ambiguity. And I think the APUC does have, under their territorial issues, the ability to deal with that situation. The other comment, if I might, I just...
Representative Davis?
Just wanted to say I have gone through this email from CH2M Hill and made comments. I just want to tell Representative Roper about this. Specific suggestions about how to add some of that stuff in here. I'll get together with you.
Representative Rockwood, do you have another question?
Mr. Chairman, I think that I appreciate what the Representative Porter mentioned there. I'm not sure it isn't handled under the territoriality issue. And just to clarify, the point is that the local utilities can opt out, but they can opt out under territoriality, and the provisions of this bill would apply to them if there was a competitive situation. And that's the point, the question that Representative Porter asked, and I think we probably need to deal with it to make sure it is clear. I think if there is competition in an area, then those provisions would come into place, yeah. That's the tripwire type of circumstance. If the commission allows competition, then they have to look at these issues to make sure that the consumer is protected. That's the intention. But, I mean, it becomes problematic in a small area, you know. I think, Mr. Chairman, just in conclusion from my remarks, is I think some of the testimony we've heard today, I think, just exhibits the fear and loathing of electric restructuring and the lack of confidence in the APUC, number one, and then, number two, the concerns about what electric restructuring will do, particularly in rural areas. And that's a consistent thing that all these utilities have brought to the table consistently, and in quite frankly, I think it's ironic. This bill is intended to answer some of those concerns, not to inflame them. I mean, it's exactly the opposite. And those people wouldn't be affected unless they found themselves in that competitive situation. And then this could kick in and be a help.
And the chair concurs with that general statement. So we'll move off then, and we'll hold House Bill 81 over, and we'll ask the sponsor to prepare a substitute, and anybody else that would like to provide information to him, please do so that we can take this up again the next time we meet. And with that, we'll now move over to House Bill 185. This is a bill sponsored by Representative Ogun. Representative Ogun, would you join us here? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here.
Say that now.
Just now, I don't know if it'll be when I leave, huh?
Just a little
joke, huh?
A little joke.
Yeah. Got to maintain a sense of humor around here. Go crazy. Thank you for
a lot of us, actually. It's too late for a lot of us, actually.
Get cynical already.
Representative Ogun.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I introduce this bill. It's pretty straightforward. It just simply adds water utilities to the existing exemption for electric and telephone utilities that don't gross $50,000 annually. Makes them exempt from regulation as a public utility. I introduced the bill because of a situation came to my attention this year. I was hoping the Alaska Public Utilities Commission would take action on this and resolve this and settle this. There's a subdivision in my district that there was two phases developed or platted in the subdivision. First phase was developed, the homeowners association assumed ownership of the utility. A subsequent different developer has decided to come in and develop the second phase. It was never developed, it was simply platted. Would like to tag on to the homeowners, the water system that the homeowners association now owns, and the homeowners association would like him to develop his own water system. So the developer appealed to the Public Utilities Commission to get them declared as a public utility, which to me seemed kind of a little bit outrageous because it's a private well, it's a private system, and suddenly they'll be subject to being a public utility. I waited till real late in the session. I was hoping the Alaska Public Utilities Commission would do their job and rule on it. They have not, so we introduced the bill. I would bring your attention to, I assume you have it, a handout by Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Thoreau.
It's in everyone's packet.
I looked through it. This the opposition to this bill handed this out on page... On the second page of the memo, it talks about a couple things. Water is essential to a person's survival while electricity and telephone service are not. Well, I would say that electricity is kind of essential to most people's survival in Alaska because their water systems don't run without electricity. Their heat doesn't run without electricity. And if you have an emergency, it's nice to be able to call the fire department or the police department to... get help. So I would say that maybe they are essential to person's survival, and unless you live in an area that doesn't have a well or electricity, which I have done before by choice. But they, in the next paragraph in the middle of the page, it says, historically, Alaska Public Utilities Commission has not sought out small water utilities such as homeowner associations for regulation. The APUC only becomes involved in a regulation of utilities when asked to do so by a consumer or lending institution. They go to footnote 2, and footnote 2 says, see Country Lane Estate Subdivision Property Owners Association. Well, two pages back is what they're attaching for the footnote. If you look on the first page of that, down about halfway down on the left-hand column.
What's the page number on the bottom of that?
It's page 238.
Okay.
The order declares a small residential subdivision sewer operation to be a public utility, but it exempts the utility from regulation by the commission. So by their own footnotes, I would say that, yeah, they're exempted from regulation. They're declared a public utility, but they aren't regulated. So anyway, kind of an interesting point.
On that point, Representative Berkowitz?
On that point, I mean, one of the first things they taught me when I was in law school was those little syntheses at the beginning, those are nothing more than editorial comment about the content of an order. And as I read that particular Public Utilities Commission, they made the general determination that small utilities or the small residential sewer operations are public utilities subject to regulation. But this particular instance, an exception, and they granted an exception subject to certain conditions. So to make a sweeping statement that they're in but they're out, I think misreads what the order actually stated.
Continue.
Thank you. Well, I just thought it was kind of curious how they're using this as an example, and an example they used, they exempted them. So we'd like to do the same thing. We'd like to exempt them. They're only 50, you know, less than 50,000. If it works for electric and telephone, it should work for water. And I'll leave it there. And
The chair has a question. Representative Ogun, where does the $50,000 fit in there? I mean, how do we pick that? How does that apply?
Well, I picked it because there was a precedent set for electric and telephone utilities, and it seemed, since it was already in statute and there was a precedent for that, it seemed that might be inappropriate.
So it's the same figure then that is used for electric. Okay, all right.
We just added water to the...
Representative Davis, did you have a question?
Well, just, I guess, sort of a question. It's really a comment, and I'd just like Representative Ogun to maybe to comment on my comment, and that is that it seems to me that this is another example of a continuing class of legislation that we've had that seems to be dealing with individual circumstances, you know, sort of legislation by anecdote. And I guess I'm concerned, Mr. Chair, about, you know, trying to come here and legislate a solution to a series of individual problems that exist out there. Just in general, I presume that the opt-out provision provides to these guys too. So if the homeowners association wants to opt out of economic regulation, they can do that. But I think that when you develop a subdivision and provide water to anybody that's moving into that subdivision, that there need to be some public protections under that, and the appropriate place to resolve issues that arise as to that provision of public service is the APUC. That's exactly what they were formed for. I share the frustration that perhaps the decision is not timely, but to resolve the lack of timeliness at the APUC by adopting legislation, it seems to me to be the wrong approach.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't disagree that an individual situation was the impetus for this, but quite often individual situations bring things to light that make it an interesting review of the law. I guess my question in this is, why in the world is there a statute that says that there's a $50,000 gross income exemption for electrical and telephone that doesn't include water? I mean, Birch Horton is a very reputable firm, but I disagree with the distinction they try to make between those kinds of
necessity.
Utilities.
Yeah.
If it's good for the goose.
Yeah. First of all, Mr. Vice Chair, and then.
Yes, I know. These small water utilities, I think, have always been protected in the health and required samples. I know in the Anchorage area in the early times, on the hillside, and a lot of areas, subdivisions had their own water systems, and of course they was, I think, very tightly regulated by the health issues, and that was the main concern of that. And I know up in the Wasilla area during the 80s mass development up there, there was many areas where water was almost prohibitive, say on certain lots, going 800 to 1,000 feet, where less than a half a mile away there was adequate water supplies, and that was so that was something that that was commonly used with the water system, and everybody shared. There wasn't all, I don't think it was, I think it was most of the ones that I know is a non-profit thing. I mean, it was just the utilities were based on cost, and I share the same concerns as Representative Davis about the public's involvement, but I think the main thing is the sanitation and the health issues, and I think that without this these things, I have did lots of subdivisions that had this same situation. Then I think Spinard Utilities started in Spinard, very similar, that was eventually took over by AWWU, but they started back in the 50s with pipes in the ground. But anyway, I just think that this is appropriate, peaceful legislation, and I don't think that APUC should burden the public with these small water systems with more and more regulation. I strongly believe that the health issue has got to be addressed, but beyond that.
Mr. Chairman, my comment on that, or if I can wait until the other members.
Representative Wogan, you can respond.
Well, I believe the DEC covers the health issues, and for those things, it's just a matter of if you move into a subdivision, you buy a house, you're a member of the homeowners association. Suddenly, you as by virtue of membership in this homeowners association, you become a public utility. I mean, that's not exactly what I think a lot of people envisioned when they bought into the subdivision, so anyway, leave it there.
Representative Berkowitz?
I think actually this conversation highlights the need to understand why water was not included initially, and I'd be curious about the legislative history of this subsection, number one. And number two, I'm curious about the impacts beyond just this one situation in Palmer.
I think we'll hear from Mr. Nelson. Elliot was off net at the moment, and we may be able to get some answers to those questions from him. Mr. Elliot, one moment, please. Did you have a question?
One question, Representative Roper, first. Can you tell me how many units or how many homes and lots are in Phase 1 and how many in Phase 2?
I think Mr. Elliott would be able to answer that more accurately.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Nelson Elliott, this is the chair. If you're on line, we'd like to hear from you, sir, on House Bill 185.
Yes, this is Nelson Elliott. I'm one of the directors with the Homeowners Association here in Palmer. We would like to thank Mr. Hogan for introducing this legislation and the committee for hearing us today. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, sir. Please give us your testimony on the bill.
This Homeowners Association, and I believe most of the others, at least in this area and probably throughout the state, were originally set up following housing urban development model for community water systems. And these systems require an article of incorporation in a nonprofit corporation. You've got to have covenants and bylaws. And those determine how the systems are owned and operated. The systems are self-regulating, and approval of them by HUD is required to obtain mortgages under federal programs such as VA and FHA. And these are the documents under which all of us here purchased our properties and our homes. Current APUC policy, at least informally, from what we have discovered since this complaint was filed, is that in discussing it with APUC staff members, five of them have indicated to us that they do not regulate homeowners associations. One informed the director of APUC will not issue the necessity and convenience to homeowners associations. Second staff member at APUC indicated to one of our directors when they called to get procedural information, they would not even believe that the commission had decided to hear this complaint until the director had given them the complaint, the file number for the case, and they called it up on the computer and found it. APUC at this point has nothing in place to regulate homeowner associations and have no guidelines. Their own filing, they have made one filing, the advocacy staff in this particular case has made one filing, and their recommendation is that the commission needs to convene a rulemaking docket to establish guidelines for these homeowner associations. As it stands right now, APUC policy prevents owner-operated systems such as this from complying with the statutes or obtaining exemption from regulation, and there are no guidelines or regulations to follow that would provide us with reasonable assurance of protection from even frivolous complaints. If APUC holds that they have the right to regulate these homeowner associations, do they not have a statutory responsibility to do so? What statutory authority do they have to nullify our articles of incorporation, covenants, and bylaws under which we purchased our property? If they regulate us, then provisions in those documents would be basically out the window. We would have to rewrite them. Currently, ADEC indicates that there are approximately 700 Class A water systems in the state of Alaska. It would be curious to know how many of those does APUC regulate, and do they have the staff and budget resources to regulate all of them? Again, if the systems fall under their regulatory authority, do they not have the responsibility to establish clear rules for regulation and or exemption? Our only means of revenue are through our annual and special assessments. If APUC regulates us, this association would have no way of raising funds to meet emergency situations if reserve funds are insufficient to cover the cost. We would have to file for relief through a tariff and rate process prior to being able to collect any money. Financial flexibility would be lost. House Bill 185 provides for the same exemptions for water systems that electric and telephone utilities. Utility grossing less than $50,000 annually has a limited subscriber base. The cost of regulation by APUC would dramatically increase consumer costs. In our case, we would no longer be able to manage the water system. We would have to contract with a management firm having utility tariff and rate-making experience. This, coupled with the APUC fees for regulation, could easily double the cost of our operation. This homeowner association is only 2 years old, and we've had very little time to accumulate reserves. Most of those have currently been eroded in legal costs associated with this complaint. The idea of regulation by complaint is a very expensive and slow process. The issues as far as CVOA and the developer that are in dispute really are not relevant, we feel, to this legislation. The legislation would present unnecessary costs associated with regulation. leave all of the articles, covenants, and bylaws of the homeowner association throughout the state intact and still provide protection to the subscribers. An exempt utility can opt for APUC regulation by vote of members in the same manner that the Copper Valley Electric Association opted out. That's pretty much what we have to say. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. This whole discussion brings up in my mind the interrelationship between ADEC and APUC, and not only water, but sewer, water and sewer as well, and it makes me wonder whether or not maybe we should have one or the other, but not necessarily both. I can't imagine if you're trying to put together a subdivision and you've got to go to ADEC in order to get all of the requirements that they have, and then how that interrelates with the Public Utilities Commission as well, particularly when you get to water and sewer and things of that nature. I presume at any rate that you're dealing with the Department of Economic Conservation as well.
Yes, we are. ADEC does regulate these water systems. We are required to do both monthly testing for coli bacteria, and there are a number of other periodic tests that we are required to do as far as our safety of water. Any engineering on these systems requires approval by ADEC as relative to the adequacy of the system for the proposed number of units that will be using it. So yes, there is considerable regulation that we have to comply with and do comply with as far as ADEC is concerned.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elliott. Any other questions of the gentleman? Representative Davies.
Thank you. Could you give us some further understanding of really what the dispute is here? I mean, as I read this thing from Birch Horton Bittner and Chirut, what's the...
The original subdivision here was set up. There were 46 lots that were developed. The original engineering that went to ADEC for approval for the water system was very specific. It requested engineering approval for 50 or less units. That is the construction approval that they got from ADEC, and that is what this system is currently approved by ADEC for. The water rights associated with the well, the only thing ever applied for was for the 46 units that are currently subdivided. The Tract B property that the current developer would like to develop as phase two of this property was never subdivided. It's roughly an 11 and a half acre tract of land. The developer now wants to subdivide it and use this water system for it. The original concept for this subdivision was that tract would be part of this subdivision. The original engineering by the original developers, engineers, and approved by APUC very specifically delineates what would be done to this water system to upgrade it to meet the needs of that property if it was ever developed. We, as the Homeowners Association, our discussions with the developer have asked for nothing engineering-wise that was not in that original engineering by ADEC.
Thank you.
The developer simply does not want to comply with the original engineering.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. If you have your testimony in writing, would you please fax it to Walter Wilcox of the committee in my office.
465-2273. Yes, we will do that.
All right, fine. Thank you very much. Representative Berkowitz?
Just a question, Mr. Chair. Are we going to hear from the developer as well?
Counselor is online, right?
Do you have anybody else on the line? I don't have anybody.
The only people who have expressed an interest were...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, okay. Yes, is this Rebecca Polly?
Yes, it is.
All right, fine. I'm sorry. I missed you. You were above my line there, but please give us your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Polly, and I'm an attorney with the law firm of Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Chereau. And we represent Mr. Melish and his complaint at the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. And we also would like to thank the committee for providing us with this opportunity to comment on House Bill 185. Before I launch into my prepared comments, there are a few items that were raised that I would like to expand upon. First and foremost, the case of Country Lane Estates was attached because it demonstrates how well the present system works. In that case, a lender requested a declaratory judgment as to whether this homeowners association would be a public utility under state statute. And the commission very wisely said, yes, they are. They meet the statutory definition of a public utility, which is service to 10 or more people for compensation. And then the APUC recognized that this association had many of the hallmarks of a cooperative and that it would not benefit the public to have the association economically regulated. And under the statute AS 4205-711D provided the association with a public interest exemption while retaining jurisdiction to hear disputes that may arise. And as you will hear in a few moments, that is one of our primary concerns of House Bill 185, is that in exempting water utilities, the only forum left to resolve a dispute is the court system, which is much more expensive and time-consuming than the APUC. Secondly, I think it's important for this committee to understand that the situation that gave rise to this, Mr. Melish is in fact, will be a member of the association, as will the individuals who eventually purchased the 22 homes. They will become members of the association. What I would like to do here in the next few moments is, without attempting to try this matter before you, relay Mr. Melish's experience in attempting to obtain water service. And as I say, while House Bill 185 on its face appears fairly benign, to me, it raises the question, why not throw in all the other public utility services as well? If the idea is, well, everything under $50,000 doesn't need to be regulated, why not throw in gas, petroleum, waste, everything else? And I think the reason for that is because we recognize that there are health and safety concerns, that certain types of utilities have very broad-reaching social impacts. For the past 2 years, Mr. Melish has attempted to work with this association regarding the development of phase two. And while there's always two sides to every story, we find that the association has been unreasonable and unfair in its demands. If House Bill 185 passes, Mr. Melish's frustrating and time-consuming experiences will become routine for other developers. House Bill 185, while its intentions may be fine, is actually anti-consumer and anti-development. I don't think it's often that you find too many bills that fit both of those. First, I'm going to provide a brief background that will provide you with an overview of Mr. Mellish's experience. And then I'm going to address why we believe it's unnecessary reactive legislation. And then finally, I'm going to suggest a couple of solutions. What I'm going to give you is a summary of the undisputed facts as admitted by the answer to Mr. Mellish's complaint. And some of these you're already familiar with from Mr. Elliott. The Crimson View subdivision was designed and platted to be developed in two phases. Phase one consists of 47 lots, and phase two consists of 22 lots. There is a community well and an integrated loop distribution water system that was designed and installed to serve both phase one and phase two. So presently on these 22 lots, you have a distribution system that is connected to the well at phase one. The note on the official plat provides that lot 11, block one of phase one of this plat is the site of the community well system and will be exclusively used as such until such time of connection of the subdivision's designed water system to a possible future city water system, at which time the community well will be abandoned. As required by the plat note, in 1984, phase one was developed with 46 lots, single-family residence, and one lot for the community well. And in 1985, the water system was completed, and this is when the integrated loop distribution network was extended to all 16.